The Colorado Avalanche, half of the Stanley Cup finalists set as we record this right now. Sean, it's the Colorado Avalanche sweeping the Edmonton Oilers in the Western Conference final, sweeping the Nashville Predators in the first round, needing six games to beat the St. Louis Blues in the second round. I can't think you're going to sit here and say you're surprised it's the Avalanche, right?
No, I picked Avalanche to win the whole thing way back in the day. I had Avalanche, Tampa Bay Lightning, and the Tampa Bay Lightning have come back to make a series out of that. So we'll see what happens. But no, I'm not surprised. I'm surprised at the ease that they've done it. I think at this point, right, we have to say that the curse is over. The mountain has been climbed. I know they haven't won yet, but that second round that's loomed over them forever has clearly been put in their rearview mirror, with not only beating the Blues in the hardest series that they've had to date, but then just utterly dominating an Edmonton Oiler team in the Western Conference final. There, if I'm not mistaken, they're the first team since the Kings to get to the final with only two losses.
Yeah, I think you are correct. They're winning the Stanley Cup, by the way. I'm just pretty much going to put that out there right now. The Avalanche are winning the Stanley Cup because from what I've seen from them in these playoffs, there is no game that they can't play. There's nothing that they can't handle. They will have, whether it's Tampa Bay or the New York Rangers, they will have the better team. They will not have the better goalie, and that might be the great equalizer. I understand that, but they will have the better team. And I think that when it's all said and done, we're watching the Colorado Avalanche lift the Stanley Cup just based on what I've seen. You're right. They got over that hump, right? That second round thing, that was a real thing for them, right? For 3 years in a row, they were able to get over that. And once they cleared it, Sean, they went sailing. You know, I mean, and I'm not saying, look, I think regardless of who they play, they're going to be in the same boat as Tampa Bay was in game one against the New York Rangers in the Eastern Conference final, right? I mean, it's going to be rust. It's going to be hard, but they're going to find their game. Whether they win that game or not, they'll find their game. And they are the faster team, I think, than anyone. They have, of the three remaining, I'll say it, they have the best defenseman. Cale Makar is that guy right now for me. And I know we love Victor Hedman, and I do. I love him. I think he's a great player. Cale Makar is a bigger difference maker for me right now. So I'm going out there right now, throwing it out there. I'll throw it to you. I mean, I'm not asking you to make a prediction, but you can sure shoot down mine. The Colorado Avalanche will win the Stanley Cup.
Well, that's who I picked, so I'm not going to shoot it down, but I will play a little bit of devil's advocate. Otherwise, our podcast is over 3 minutes in, and we can't have that. So first of all, they do have the better goalie. Second of all, let me drop a little bit of historical knowledge on you. Thanks to the young gentlemen and ladies at NHL Stats, I now know that there are three teams that have gone into the final with a rest of longer than 10 days, which the Colorado Avalanche will do if there's a game seven. Each of those three teams has lost the Stanley Cup final. Each of those teams was really good because they swept a really good opponent in the conference final. Eight of the 11 teams that have had the longest layoffs in Stanley Cup final history have lost. It's a real thing. It is impossible to replicate what you're doing against a quality opponent in practice. You don't want to get hurt. You don't want to go full speed. Your goalies are going to be absolutely lost. Look at Vasilevsky. In the last round, it took him until halfway through game two to figure out what he was doing. And now he's back to normal. So now you're going to have a superior goalie in form against an inferior goalie of whom we don't know who it'll be. There is a goalie controversy in Colorado. I firmly believe that. I don't know how you give the job back to Darcy Kemper when Pavel Francouz was 6-0, but it doesn't matter who it is. They're going to be off for close to 2 weeks, and they're going to fall into bad habits in practice, and they're going to have rust because practice is no good for goalies. It's just not. Organized team practice is horrible for goalies. It fosters bad habits because they're trying to stop 3-on-1s all the time, which doesn't happen in a game. So the goalie coaches are going to be huge. They're going to have to figure out a game plan to keep both goalies sharp, and they're going to have to figure out who they're going to play. But I think there's some things that are playing against the Colorado Avalanche that could make this very interesting. And if it's the Tampa Bay Lightning with their smarts that they have from winning the cup 2 years in a row, that's even more telling because they're going to have the confidence and the intelligence to know exactly what to do. And the last thing I'll say to you is I love Cale Makar. Victor Hedman, it to me, is still the best defenseman left in the playoffs, just because, again, what he's been through. Cale Makar has never been through a Stanley Cup final. It is the ultimate crucible. Everything is ramped up, the speed, the physicality. And I'm not saying he can't do it, but Victor Hedman's proven he can do it. Until somebody else proves they can, Victor Hedman's the guy.
Those are all good points.
Of course they are.
Yeah, they are all good points. White noise, because the Colorado Avalanche are going to win the Stanley Cup. And here's, look, I mean, Makar, McKinnon, Landeskog, Rantanen really, you know, is a dynamic player that could be the difference maker for them. I think they're quicker on the back end than either of the two teams in the Eastern Conference final right now. And I think it's an interesting stat, you know, of the teams that have been rested before going into the Stanley Cup final, as much as the Avalanche are going to be, you know, how much they're going to have that rest. I think this rest could serve them well, actually, whereas I don't think it really did much for the Lightning before the Eastern Conference final. But the difference for me is they're going to open at home, and there's going to be great energy in their building. And that is something that they can play off. Immediately, what comes to mind is Tampa Bay, obviously, because they're in the Eastern Conference final and they came off a sweep of the Florida Panthers, but they opened on the road and they opened against a team that was playing every other day and was playing really well at home. Difference. There's a difference there. They didn't have that extra surge of energy that they would have gotten from their home crowd. The Avalanche will have that surge of energy, and I think that'll matter. And in regards to Cale Makar, you're never going to hear an argument, Sean, from me against Victor Hedman and who he is as a defenseman in the National Hockey League. I mean, we know how good he is and what he has done. But for me right now, Cale Makar is a bigger difference maker. Victor Hedman isn't a guy, if you're playing against the Lightning, Victor Hedman's not the guy you're saying, we must mark him. We have to stop him. You're worried about what he can do defensively and certainly on the power play. But you're worried more about Kucherov and you're worried more about Stamkos. And if he plays, Braden Point, right? But, and even Andre Palat, I can even throw him in the mix because of how good he's been of late. But Makar is that guy that you have to worry about on the Avalanche. But so is McKinnon. And so is Landeskog. And so is a few others, right? So that to me makes him the bigger difference maker. And I'm trying to take the guy who is a bigger difference maker across the ice. Hedman, terrific defensively. Makar's good defensively. Hedman, good offensively. Makar is otherworldly offensively. So I hear what you're saying about Hedman. Makar is the difference maker. To me, he very well could be the Conn Smythe winner at this point through three rounds. And another good round, I think he gets it.
Yeah, and that's all fine and well, but that wasn't the argument you made. The argument you made is the question you asked is, who's the best defenseman? There's nobody as talented as Cale Makar as a defenseman. He is the most talented defenseman in the NHL. There's no question. Never, ever would I argue it. That would be stupid. Most talented does not mean best. It doesn't. And there is things that you learn from going deep into the playoffs multiple times that you cannot buy, that you cannot be born with, that you cannot leverage until you learn them. And that's the argument that I'm making. I would be foolish, and I've been foolish many times in my life, but this will not be one of them. I would be foolish to say that Victor Hedman is a more skilled defenseman than Cale Makar. At this moment in time, and not for very much longer, he is the better defenseman.
I think Makar is a bigger difference maker in a series.
Okay, and then we have a different argument, but that was not the premise you started at.
Fine. Bigger difference maker in a series. Before we move on, let's give the Oilers some talk here, right? I mean, you brought up McDavid and Draisaitl. We've had conversations throughout the year, certainly throughout the playoffs, on these two guys. They end up winning 8 games. They get to the conference final, but they win 8 games. And there could be an argument that that's not good enough. You know, I mean, like, you got to put up a fight in the conference final. You got to win a few games for it to really be considered a success, because, you know, 8 games is only halfway there. Even though they got 4 games more, they didn't win any of them. I think it's a successful season for the Oilers for the simple fact that we have now seen Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl perform at the highest level of their games in the Stanley Cup playoffs and make an impact in winning in the Stanley Cup playoffs. They did not win in a game. I get it. In the Western Conference Final, it was not the fault of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl that they did not win. And these two guys combined for 65 points in 16 games. They were the best players in the playoffs when they were playing. And I think that's the biggest thing to come out of this for the Oilers is we have now seen it. They've gotten the experience and they have played at the highest possible level they could play at through as long as they could play.
Yeah, and it's a success because they won the first two rounds and I picked against them in each round. They won the Battle of Alberta, which is huge. Like, they've proven that they have the mental wherewithal now to succeed in the playoffs, right? And that was a big knock on them as a group. It was a big knock on Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And let's not forget, Leon Draisaitl did what he did with a high ankle sprain. I've had a high ankle sprain. I can't even walk from the train station to the office. It's two blocks. Like, I'm ready to take a cap. He played 25 minutes a game and scored 30 points in 16 games. Mm-hmm. Like, that's crazy. The wherewithal and courage, and we throw that word around a lot, and it shouldn't be thrown around that much in sports because there's things that you're courageous at. And I don't know how often sports is one of them, and we overuse it, but the courage that he displayed in game 3 and 4 when things already seemed a bit lost was unbelievable. Like, he got hit at one point, I think it was Darren Helm hit him, and he went down on the ice, and it took him like a minute to get back to the bench and put his head on the runner. And, you know, you're like, oh, that's it, he's finally done. And then they get a power play and he's out there and he sets up a goal. He had 4 points in game 4, which was just an insane game, one of several in the first three rounds that have been played out west. I couldn't help but marvel at him. And I honestly think we just had this conversation about Makar and Hedman. Like, that's the transition. Like, when we have this conversation about McDavid next year, most of my arguments are gone now.
Yeah.
He's done it. He's proven it at the highest level against the best competition. He has that special something. He's learned, much like the Tampa Bay Lightning learned against the Columbus Blue Jackets a couple of years ago. He's learned what it takes. And he's applied it to his game, and I don't think there's any stopping him now. And I think he's going to make that transition from most skilled player in the league to best player in the league because of what he's learned in the last month.
But why won't you say that about Makar then? He went for,
because he hasn't learned it yet.
Why not? Why has McDavid learned it and Makar not?
To me, there's a bigger skill difference in McDavid and the rest of his peers than there is in Makar and the rest of his peers.
Yes, because I think you have to give that to Connor McDavid. Yes, I agree with that. Although I think the skill difference that we're seeing from Makar versus the rest of his peers from a defensive standpoint, from a, you know, the rest of the defensemen, is growing.
It may well be, and I said in my argument that it's not going to last for long. Hedman right. is not going to be that player for long. Makar is coming, and it's over. Like, he will be the best defenseman in the league. He will be the most talented. Whatever moniker you want to put in front of defenseman, except for worst, he's going to be it very soon. I'm still giving the guy, as Patrick Waugh would say, you can talk about whatever you want. I'm just going to put these two Stanley Cup rings in my ears, and I don't need to listen to you. Like, that's what Hedman can do right now. Makar can't. And it's not Hedman's a fourth line guy who killed some penalties and says, oh, look at my two rings. You know, it's not. He is one of the guys that made that happen. Mentally, physically, emotionally, whatever you want to put, whatever category you want to talk about, Hedman's right there. McCarr's going to be right there. He's not yet. And that, again, that's the difference. And I don't think it's there for McDavid anymore. He hasn't won, but he was so close already. And the only knock he had was that he had never truly stepped to the fore. He had been competitive in the playoffs. He went otherworldly. There are only 3, maybe 4 players in the history of hockey that did what he did this year offensively in the playoffs. And it was bigger than that. He was all over the ice. Like, you actually saw Connor McDavid back check. You actually mm-hmm. saw him play physically. You saw him do all those things that when you watch him in mid-December and you're like, wow, he's such a talented player, but where's the rest of his game? It was all there. How do you put that genie back in the bottle? I don't think you can.
4 guys. He had 12 He had points in 12 of 16 games. Four players have done that before, and that was Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Sidney Crosby, and Evgeny Malkin.
That's right? A pretty good list.
It's a pretty good list for Connor McDavid to be on. And I would think, you know, I mean, short of the Stanley Cups, you know, he belongs on that list with his talent. You know, he does with his ability. Real quick on the Oilers, though, one last thing. So they'll go into the offseason. The Kane situation is very interesting, the Evander Kane situation, because he was an impact player for them. He was good. He wants to sign. What's the deal for Kane? But more importantly, I would think that they'd have to move, you know, get a new goalie, right? I mean, you got to move on eventually here from Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen and find yourself. Mike Smith was good in the playoffs, but he was also a reason why they lost.
Yeah, of course he was, and he's getting older. And if your window's open for a few years, and it is with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in their mid-20s, you clearly have a window, much like the Penguins had and still have with Crosby. I mean, we've been talking about them for a decade now. Like, I think you can do that with Edmonton, and Mike Smith's not going to be the answer for a decade. He's 40 years old. You know, father time wins every argument. Yeah. So at some point you have to find a goalie, but how are you going to do it? Where's the money going to come from? You know, they're tight against the cap and you know, who's going to be out there. And I don't think Evander Kane's back. I don't think he would take a discount. I don't think he can take a discount.
Right.
You know, he needs to capitalize on what he did this year. He posted today a thank you to the Edmonton fans that, you know, you can read into it what you want, but it sounded like somebody who was looking at his next stop, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the biggest knock against the Oilers has been who fills out that team, right? Like, again, you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, really talented team, really talented. Their third and fourth lines have carried them. Because when you get to the final four, everybody's really talented. Everybody's top six is really good. Everybody's top four defensemen are really good. And usually everybody has a really good goalie. So the difference makers are your bottom six and your bottom two. Edmonton has nothing. And that's what undid them, right?
Yeah.
The top two lines played the MacKinnon line and Colorado second line to a standstill, if not won it. And then it was the role guys that were the difference, right? You had Cogliano scoring, you had Lehkonen scoring, you know, you had all these guys scoring, and you never heard those names from the Edmonton Oilers. They need to be deeper.
You got to find that depth. They do. They absolutely have to find a little bit more depth, but in, you know, it's funny because to find that depth, you got to sacrifice somewhere. And, you know, did they sacrifice a net and just bring Mike Smith back 2.2 million or whatever it is and try to ride it out again with a different backup, right? That's even cheaper and not spend a lot of money on your goaltending. But then you look at it in the end, eventually it cost them, you know, so, you rob Peter to play Paul, right? I mean, like you're going to acquire a goaltender through a trade or a signing or whatever it might be and pay him more money. But then you're going to be losing some money that you could use to that depth. Or do you put it to the depth and say, we're going to ride it out with the goalie we got, right? But is that good enough there? So that's a tough situation. That's an interesting dilemma. A lot of teams face it, but certainly we see it. It was right in front of our faces that's the dilemma that the Oilers have.
Ken Holland's got a lot of work to do, the GM in Edmonton. But let's not forget that in December and January, he was a GM that they wanted to run out of hockey. He had lost his fastball, fired his coach, last ditch effort to make things work. They figured it out. They won 8 games in the playoffs. Like, these were things that weren't going to happen in the middle of the season. Like, people were ready to blow up the Edmonton Oilers. So we got to think of a different plan. Like, and now they're one of the four best teams in hockey. Like, so, and Jay Woodcroft did a great job. You know, Kenny Holland said he's the interim guy, but he wants him back. He wants him on a full long deal. I think he's earned it. Kenny Holland's a pretty smart guy as a GM, and you don't lose it that fast. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, that's not a couple of years down the road, but they did an amazing job for where they were in January. And I give him, you know, full credit. I give Kenny full credit for that, for believing in this group and letting it come to maturation. And, you know, let's see what he can do. He's got his hands tied a little bit, and it'll be a little bit of a Houdini act if he figures this one out, but I'm not betting against him.
A Houdini act, Sean. I like that. You're right. Might be, but I would not, as you said, count out Ken Holland either. So we'll see what the Oilers do. Anyway, let's get to our guest. He is Jack Johnson, Avalanche defenseman. He's going to play in the Stanley Cup final for the first time. We were able to catch up with Jack Johnson, and here is that interview. All right, Jack, thanks so much. So I got to ask you right off the top here, you know, this is a long layoff, and I know you've probably been thinking about it, and there's been questions asked, and how are the Avalanche going to handle the layoff and all that? So I guess just you're early into it. What do you think of it, and how are you handling this as you just kind of wait?
Well, I think we're making the most of the situation. You know, we've got some time off, which means we got some guys with some bumps and bruises that get to get healthy. And then the guys that are healthy, we get to take the opportunity to fine tune things. You get to practice, you get to train, and make sure that you can hit the ground running whenever the next round starts.
Are you watching other series? Are you paying attention? And if you are watching, are you taking notes or do you watch as a fan?
I'm watching now more than I have been in the previous rounds, just because we're playing the winner of this round. So, you're definitely taking a couple, I think mental notes in your head. But, whenever we figure out who the next opponent is, we're going to get plenty of information from our coaching staff. And so you don't have to worry about dissecting it too much. I'm paying more attention now than I have throughout the last three rounds of the playoffs.
So I got to ask you then, so you have the opportunity to potentially play the two-time defending Stanley Cup champs and eliminate them, or personally, one of your former teams. Are you saying to yourself, man, I'd rather have that or that, or are you just saying, please end that series in six so we can get going here?
No, you know what? I mean, they're both great teams. And one is a former team, but I only played 13 games and I was hurt. And so it was definitely probably the definition of a cup of coffee with the team. So it's, wasn't too, emotionally involved with saying, hey, it's a former team type thing. I honestly don't have any take one way or the other in terms of who we're going to play either opponent. It's going to be a great team and a huge challenge for us and a great Stanley Cup final.
You've waited so long in your career to do this. You had a couple of close calls where you either joined teams or left teams after they had gone to the Cup final. For you, it's been such a long journey, and I know it hasn't started yet, but just to get to this point, to make it through three rounds and everything that goes along with it, has it exceeded what you expected?
Yeah, it's been awesome. You're right. It's been a long time. 16 years, and I never really even had a sniff to get to this point. And it's something that I'm really cherishing the moment, enjoying the moment, staying in the moment, not trying to get too far ahead. And I think everyone on the team has done a great job, not getting too high, not getting too low, and just staying the course. And I'm trying to follow suit as well. It's going to be a great experience, and could be a once in a lifetime experience. So I'm absolutely thrilled about it, and can't wait to get going.
And part of that journey, it was, a little over 10 years ago, you're with the Kings, they trade you, they go win the cup. You sign with the Pittsburgh Penguins a year after they win it. They're within that window. Obviously they still are, but they're within that window and it doesn't happen. I got to wonder, did you start to think like, maybe this just not going to be part of my story?
It could be. It's happened to a lot of guys, right? There's a lot of guys that have played a long time and, unfortunately never got a chance to play in the finals or, to win it. And, some things are just out of your control. Like, for example, getting traded, it's just one of those things, things in sports, you can't dwell on that too much because that was out of your control. But that was just kind of life. And, I didn't get too wrapped up into that because there's a lot of things that were just out of my control. And, I just kept trying to stay the course, and here I am today and trying to make the most of it.
You mentioned how long the journey's been, and there's been a number of stops, and Dan went over a couple of them. I'm curious, you're playing with a player now and Nate MacKinnon, who's one of the elite players in the game right now, who's taken his game to another level, it seems, in these playoffs. I'm wondering where he ranks amongst the guys you've played with as far as not only skill and leadership, but just determination.
Yeah, no, definitely right up there at the top of my list. He's got all the tools, right? He's got the size, the speed, the skill. He's incredibly determined, and you could see it in the Edmonton series. There's times where he took it upon himself to make a difference, and showed great leadership. And I think he's one of the guys that definitely drives this team, and he's one of the engines of the team. And we're very lucky to have him. Throughout the course of my career, I've been very fortunate to play with some special players, and he adds to the list for me of guys that I feel very fortunate to be on the same team and to get to call a teammate.
He's so intense. He is so driven. He's so good, but he's so intense. And I wonder if you guys as teammates ever have to kind of just, crack a joke to lighten the mood around him a little bit, because that intensity just, I think it's what makes him great, but also it can be your worst enemy at times too. And so I wonder, you have to have a few moments of levity just built in here just to bring Nate back down to an even.
He's actually pretty, he's pretty lighthearted. Like we were just today after practice. I mean, we were all cracking jokes and even before practice, and he's right in there in the middle of it. So I think he does a really good job of bringing that intensity when at the right time and place. At the end of the day, he loves hockey and he loves being at the rink, and that's where he has fun. And he loves hanging out with the guys and just being one of the guys. And so he probably doesn't let on to the media as much as he probably should, to let everyone know that he does have a great sense of humor. And he's not that way all the time.
Make sure you let him know that. But I also wanted to ask you, Dan and I had an argument before you came on, not an argument, but we were discussing another team of yours, and Kale McCarr. We're discussing Kale McCarr, and I know you're going to listen to the show later because you have like 10 days off and you have nothing to do, so you'll have to listen to At the Rink later. But I'm curious, we both have our opinions, but neither one of us have played defense in the NHL, and not even close, actually. I'm curious if you could tell us, like, as a defenseman, when you look at Kale and you see what he does, like, what are the things that leave you kind of shaking your head and being like, that's not right? Like, nobody should be able to do that.
I mean, the first thing that stands out is just his skating ability. I mean, he can pull away from guys, turn on guys, catch guys that it's just a flat out, he can just skate better than almost everybody in the league. So that's his greatest asset, I think. And, the old adage, speed kills, right? Like he's got it. And, but he's big, he's strong, can handle the puck, he can shoot, all those things. He's got great hockey sense. Definitely his skating, it's just like all the other great players in the league. It's that elite speed and explosiveness that separates him. And, I'm a Kale McCarr fan. He's a phenomenal player, phenomenal person, and again, one of the engines of our team that helps drive this team.
The argument basically was, Sean was saying he's the best. Victor Hedman remains the best defenseman in the league because he continues to do it at the highest level for the longest time. My point was that I think Kale McCarr has taken that over, or is about to. But I said he's the biggest difference maker. Could be the biggest difference maker in the Stanley Cup final. And I think he's been the biggest difference maker for your team. When you have a defenseman that the other team has to pay attention to offensively all the time. It sounds like a basic question, but just like, how much of a difference does that make if you're playing with McCarr, but what if you were trying to defend against him? And there's the defenseman that does that. Like, that doesn't happen too often.
No, I agree. And it's definitely, a huge weapon and a unique one. It puts a lot of, to answer your question, you're playing against them. I'm sure it puts a ton of stress on the other team's forwards, to have to be very aware, on the defensive side of the puck, because Kale's coming. And, that's sometimes a very unique thing for forwards, and they're not used to that. Because Kale can outskate those forwards. If you have a step on Kale, that might not be enough. So that's what, you know, brings that unique element to the game for teams that are playing against him. I think it's a huge onus on the other team's forwards to have to be aware defensively. But no, I mean, yeah, I mean, I agree with you guys. I think he's definitely a difference maker and huge part of this team.
What do you imagine game one's going to be like? I mean, I was lucky enough to be in Denver for the first round and part of the second round and Ball Arena. I hadn't been there for a playoff game since the last time the Avalanche won a cup. It was crazy. And I would imagine it's just getting crazier. What's kind of the vibe been like since you guys defeated the Oilers? Can you go places or are you getting recognized everywhere and Stanley Cup fever's boiling over already?
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, I've had a few congratulations from like my neighbors and stuff, but I mean, me personally, I'm a pretty boring guy. I'm not going out too much. So that's, you know, I haven't even crossed that road. So, but the whole town has been awesome throughout this entire playoff run. And, you know, people that I see on a normal basis are all in on the bandwagon and following every game. And, you know, to answer your question about what game one will be like, I'm sure it'll be electric, like nothing I've ever been a part of in the NHL, but it'll be my first experience. So I really don't know. But I'm excited about it. We're going to do everything we can to make it as normal as possible, because at the end of the day, you got to try and win a hockey game. And, you know, I think trying to stay as calm, cool, and collected as possible will play in our favor. And, you know, to not get too amped up or too jittery, because the environment itself will bring that out of you. You know, it's the vibe after winning the last round. You know, we enjoyed it. We celebrated it for about, you know, 24 hours, but the job's not done. So we got right back to work, get right back to work today at practice. And we still got a lot of work ahead of us. And, you know, we're well aware of that.
You know, one of the things that I was saying before you came on was, you know, you look at in the Eastern Conference final, the Lightning had that long layoff, but they opened on the road and it was clear that they needed a game or, you know, a game and a half to get going. I wonder if you think, because you're opening at home, that crowd, which can make a difference, the energy, is that going to be enough to drive you and maybe shed whatever, say the rust, you know, quicker? Because you're going to get that vibe from that crowd, that energy from that crowd, whereas the Lightning didn't have that.
Yeah, no, I'm sure we're going to get a lot of energy from the crowd. But I mean, we had a big long layoff after the first round, you know, going into play St. Louis, and you know, this team didn't have any rust to shake off in game one against St. Louis. So you know, people just assume too that you're going to be rusty. And I think every team and every series kind of takes on a life of its own, and it's a, you know, a unique different animal and a different challenge. And so you know, we're not going into this thinking that we're going to be rusty, because we did this after round one, had a long layover, and it proved to be beneficial for us to get healthy, get rested, get ready to go again. So we're planning on following the same blueprint to get ready for game one.
Last thing for me, and it's kind of a general question, it applies to your team and applies to the team you just played, having gone through a longer run now, are you, even as a professional athlete, are you surprised or amazed at the price that's paid, right? When you look at, right, Kadri gets hurt, he's already in the gym again, he's had surgery, he's in the gym, he's going to try and play in the Stanley Cup final. Same thing with Andrew Cogliano. You find out when you're done that Leon Draisaitl was playing with a high ankle sprain, which you can't even walk on normally, or that Darnell Nurse was playing with a torn hip flexor. Do you ever sometimes sit back and go, wow, like this is unbelievable, the price that has to be paid to be where we are?
You know, am I surprised? No, because they're hockey players. And that's why, you know, I think hockey players are the toughest athletes, bar none. And they understand the price that has to be paid. And, you know, some guys have gone through it, you know, before and have won and gone to that point. And so they, you know, they really understand it. But I think going into it, everyone understands what it takes, and everyone wants it so bad, they're willing to do whatever it takes to keep on playing and to keep on helping their team. And, you know, it is a credit to them and everything, but, you know, to all those guys, even the Oilers players, am I surprised? No, they're hockey players. And so, you know, that's just what's expected in the hockey world.
This was great, man. Thanks so much for taking some time with us. I'm not a Michigan fan. I know you are a Michigan guy. You can't see it. We're a podcast, but he's wearing his Michigan hat, so he's flying his colors.
Yeah, Michigan alum.
There you go. Proud Michigan alum. Thanks so much for hopping on. This is great. All right, good luck in the Stanley Cup final.
All right, thank you.
All right, Sean. So wanted to go something in the mailbag this week, right? Coaching vacancies. There are six of them right now, potential, I think, for maybe a few others, right? It's a lot. And I was asked a question in the mailbag that said, of the fill in the blank coaching vacancies, which one is the best job? So my answer was Vegas because of the talent there and the ability to win right away if you're healthy. But then I also said Florida, if it opens, right? I mean, Andrew Brunette is still the interim coach there. If it opens, the Panthers are also, I mean, they're a ready-made team to win. They just won the President's Trophy. They've taken their lumps. They've learned a little bit, you know? And I think that obviously plays a role in it. But without that opening in Florida that we know of yet, to me, it's Vegas that has the best of these six openings that we know of, which include Dallas, Philadelphia, Detroit, Vegas, Winnipeg, and now the Boston Bruins, who I want to get into. But first, I want to get your perspective here, because I did say Vegas with all the talent there, Eichel, Pacioretty, Stone. There are issues, there are cap issues. They're going to have to deal with that. They're going to impact the roster. I understand that, but it's a good organization. It's a great market. It's a team that's ready-made to win as long as it's healthy.
Why don't you go ask Gerard Gallant or Peter DeBoer how attractive that job is? I don't know if I'm a coach. Well, I do know if I'm a coach, I'm taking that job because the opportunity to win is there. But you would certainly go in with your eyes wide open and understand that one misstep and you're out the door. To me, the most attractive job when you put everything together is the Detroit Red Wings. They're getting closer. Their GM is patient, something that is not going on in Vegas. He's smart. There's a lot of talent there, a lot of young talent there. Who wouldn't want to coach those kids, right? That they've amassed and are still coming in. I don't think they're that far away. And I think, you know, you look at all the time that Jeff Blashill had to do it. If you're a coach and you know you're going to get 4 years to work with the Detroit Red Wings, sign me up today, tomorrow, and the next day. And I fully understand the attractiveness of Vegas, because you could walk in and win a cup with the talent that they have. It's a bit of a viper's nest, right? Like it has been historically. Like the pressure's there, and pressure's good. And look, coaches are different, cut differently than I am. They embrace that pressure and they live, you know, they've injected in my veins and all that. I would rather live a little bit more of a casual life. But I just look at that Detroit job and I'm like, whew, stability, talent, you know, long-term plan. It's all right there for you. You pretty much get to put your stamp on the organization, where I don't think you get to do that in Vegas. I think you're going to be dictated to, you know, how things are going to go forward and how players are going to be used and, you know, what's going to happen. I don't think you get to make decisions on players. I think the cap's going to make those decisions and you're going to have to react to them.
Little different, but the thing with the Detroit job that I also look at, and I agree with you that it is an enticing job, right? The only thing with the Detroit job as I look at right now is look at the Rangers, right? That was David Quinn got hired. We're a rebuild. We're going to give it time. We have patience. Patience ran out, right? Patience ran out, and they fired the GM. They fired the president. They fired the coach. I'm not going to say that's going to happen in Detroit. I don't think that's happening in Detroit. They're not firing Steve Eisenman. Okay. We understand that. But that would be the only thing. Obviously, I looked at it from the point of view, and that in my answer there was my point of view was, you know, just like, you know, the football team that plays in Vegas, right? Just win, baby, right? Like, you know, you gotta have that mentality, and you can go in there and win right away, and then you're a Stanley Cup champion, right? Or you could be, right? With that team, it's still a long slog with the Detroit Red Wings to get there. It's probably more rewarding if you get there with the Detroit Red Wings from an overall build standpoint. There's no question about it, but the opportunity to win the Stanley Cup presents itself to me. That's very enticing. I'll ask it a different way though, Sean. What's the worst of the six that we know of right now, or the hardest? Let's not say worst. Let's say what's the most challenging of the six between Dallas, Philadelphia, Detroit, Vegas, Winnipeg, and the Boston Bruins?
That's a tough one. And I have two answers.
Okay.
One is Philly, because I don't know where they are and I don't know what they're going to do, right? Do they try and go get Johnny Gaudreau? Do they, you know, do they add, you know, is Ryan Ellis healthy? But more than that, their fans are pissed off. Again, you're walking into a snake pit, right? Like there's no real upside to it unless you win big. Everything else is going to be viewed as a disappointment. The fans are hardened. It doesn't seem like a very positive place right now. And maybe you're the coach that changes that. But the one, and the reason that might be a little ahead of my 1B, which is Boston, is because at least in Boston, you have had some success. The fans are engaged. But all the pieces delivered that success are gone, at least for half a year. Marchand's hurt. Bergeron has been hurt, and he's only got 1 year left on his contract.
Pastrnak. No, Bergeron's done. We don't know Bergeron's done. Bergeron's got nothing left on his contract.
Oh, that's right. He could be done.
He could be done. Yeah.
Pastrnak, you know, is like, who knows what's going to happen to him? He's got 1 year left, and they need to try and extend them, mm-hmm. and they don't know if they can. Injuries everywhere, popular coach walking out the door. It's not as attractive a job as it was 5 days ago when Bruce still held it, when Bruce Cassidy still held it. He was fired yesterday. We're taping this on Thursday. He was fired on Wednesday. Those would be the two that I think, just because of the pressure, right? Like they're model franchises. They've had success. They have engaged rabid fan bases. All the things that are rewarding when you win are difficult when you lose. And I don't know if either one of these teams can win next year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I actually think Boston's 1A. I mean, versus Philadelphia being 2 or 1B, however you want to look at it. And you can deal with, I guess, if you're a coach, you walk in there and you say, look, we're going to get McAvoy back. We're going to get Grizzlick back. We're going to get Marchand back. And I understand all that. But if you don't have Bergeron, who has been the lifeblood of that team, right? The heart and soul of that team. We don't know if he's going to be back there or in the NHL at all. That's a huge loss. Huge. Significantly enormous. I can't stress it enough, right? How big of a loss that is. And then what's Pastrnak's future? If they're going to think, if Bergeron's gone and they have all these injuries and they really haven't developed guys, do the Bruins now say what the Rangers did a few years ago and say, all right, guys, here we go. We're going to full-on rebuild. Then to me, you know, it's not a very enticing opportunity, you know, in that sense. And I'll go back to the same thing with the Rangers. I mean, you know, they were building it, got some guys, and patience ran out. And, you know, I could see the same thing happening in Boston, not in Detroit, but I could see the same thing happening in Boston. So I don't think I look at that job and I think that I like Bruce Cassidy as a coach. I think he lands somewhere. He wants to coach. He said that. The guy arranged his own Zoom call with the local writers so he could talk to them. I think that's fantastic, right? He's a really good coach. And I think in many respects was freed from that, from what could be happening in Boston over the next couple of seasons, or at least this season, the next season in particular. And now he can go out. And maybe he is that guy in Detroit. I mean, maybe he does land there and gets an opportunity to build. Or, you know, maybe he's the guy that goes to Vegas and has an opportunity to win the Stanley Cup. Or Florida, if Andrew Brunette's not brought back. You know, one of those things. To me, it's Boston, to me, is the one that I'm looking at and going, look, you're going to take it. It's 32 of those jobs, right? You're going to take it. But it could be a real tough one to handle for a few years.
Yeah, but the tiebreakers, you get to live in Boston.
It's true.
You got that going for you.
And I think look at one of the guys that they're talking about is David Quinn, right? Who was the guy with the Rangers, obviously. That's like a dream job for David Quinn. I got to imagine that's a dream job. I mean, he's a Cranston, Rhode Island guy. He's a Rhode Islander like you are. You and your, what is it, Cohogs, whatever they are, you know? He's a Rhode Islander like you. He coached at Boston University. He grew up Bruins guy. And if he were to get that opportunity, he would jump at it. So for him, and I think he deserves another opportunity, by the way, in the NHL. I think he's going to learn from what he did with the Rangers, and he's going to be better for that because he was a good coach who didn't have a, I mean, he had a shortened season, you know, a COVID season, all that. But I think he's going to learn a lot from that first experience and be a good coach in the NHL. And the Bruins opportunity, I'm sure, is one that he would jump at if it was presented to him.
Oh, of course he would. He could commute from Cranston. And you said Cranston, right, which was awesome. Nice. But
I didn't know there was another way to say it.
There's always another way to say something in Rhode Island. But you can commute. It's a 45-minute ride without traffic. So he could live at home. And do
it. Yeah, he's going to live in his parents' basement.
Yeah, I'm not saying he would do that. I'm just saying. But look, and look, you talked about Bruce and being freed and everything. Like, and all along we've said, you know, Barry Trotz is going to set the market. Everybody's waiting for Barry Trotz, best coach out there. I'm ready to make the argument that maybe Bruce is the best coach out there, and maybe you act on him first. So in the last 5 years, one coach out of these two has won 227 games, gone to a Stanley Cup final, won 8 rounds of the playoffs. The other coach has won 201 games, won a Stanley Cup final, gone to a couple of Eastern Conference finals, won 9 rounds. Not a whole lot of difference between those two guys.
Nope. It's pretty good. I'm not going to disagree with you. I think Trotz is still the guy that everybody's going to look at. But now that Cassidy is on the market, it does close the gap. Let's also look, I don't know what he's going to do. Let's not forget about Pete DeBoer. He's been to the Stanley Cup final a couple times, right? I mean, he's been a long time coach with a couple of different teams here in the NHL. So that's another one you have to look at. Obviously, Tortorella is one you have to look at. Paul Maurice, if he wants to coach. I mentioned David Quinn too, as well. I throw him in that pile as well. Not nearly in the Trotz, Cassidy, DeBoer, Tortorella, Maurice category, but not enough time yet to have that opportunity to do it. So they're out there. The coaching candidates are out there. It's going to be interesting. But Sean, I think you make we're towards the end of the podcast now, so I can agree with you, right? I mean, it's not as much fun if we agree at the beginning, but I'm going to tend to agree with you here that the gap closed. I'm not going to say that Bruce Cassidy is the favorite or the guy who now sets the market over Barry Trotz, but the gap closed enough to where it wouldn't shock me if Cassidy got a job first.
No, and if you're the second team, you're not desperate. You're not desperate anymore, right? Like, you're not like the worst thing that could have happened to Barry Trotz is for Bruce to come onto the market, because it's like having two houses in the same neighborhood instead of one, right? Like, if there's only one house in the neighborhood and you really, really want it, you're going to spend a lot of money for it. You're going to spend over value for it, all cash. You're going to all kinds of incentives to the current homeowner. But when there's two houses, you're like, oh, well, I don't like that one quite as much. I wish it had a pool, but it doesn't. But I'm still in the neighborhood and I can have all my friends over and show off, and I'm going to pay face value and we're off to the races. And maybe you get surprised that then the basement doesn't leak and the house you wanted, the basement leaks. So like, that's where it's at now. Like, it's not a slam dunk that there's one coach and everybody wants him. Like, teams have some choices now. So and I think it'll also be interesting to see if there's some young guys like a Nate Lehman out of Providence College that make that jump because of what you've seen with first time coaches in the NHL, right? Like Woodcroft and Brunette, you know, both as interim guys, both had a lot of success. Like, I think the league's going that way. The players are so young, they want to relate to younger guys. Yep. And so, you know, maybe you see some of that. I think for the big boys, you have to take Trotz and Cassidy just because of the proven record. But then when you get beyond that, maybe there's some chance taking. And I think the NHL could use some chance taking every once in a while. Well,
I agree. I mean, we know of 6 openings right now. Like we said, Dallas, Philadelphia, Detroit, Vegas, Winnipeg, and Boston. And I mentioned 6 guys: Trotz, Cassidy, DeBoer, Maurice, Quinn, and Tortorella. That's not a guarantee that all 6 of those guys are going to fill those 6 vacancies. There absolutely could be a Nate Lehman or somebody else, you know, a Jay Leach, right? I mean, somebody else coming up that has been an up and comer for a while and gets his opportunity. I'm all for that. I think we need that. Like, look at the Tampa Bay Lightning. Okay. I mean, there you go, right? The perfect example, the guy who's got the longest tenured in with one team in the National Hockey League right now is John Cooper, who never coached in the National Hockey League before he got the job in 2013 with the Lightning. Steve Yzerman gave it to him. And now you can make the case that there is no better coach in the NHL right now. And by the way, he's doing it again, right? He's doing it again. Game five is tonight. We're recording this on Thursday. Game five is tonight at Madison Square Garden. It was 2-0. It's now 2-2. We don't know where the series goes from here, but we know that the Tampa Bay Lightning are doing it once again, whether they win or lose. I mean, that they're able to continue to claw back and fight back and do this all the way. I think a ton of credit has to go to their head coach.
Yeah, you just look at the adjustments that they've made, right? Like in the series, using the Cirelli line to kind of shut down the Rangers' first line. And so much of it has been home ice matchups, right? Everybody's won their home ice games again in this series, just like the Rangers did last round against the Carolina Hurricanes until game seven. And then the Rangers won an away game and were able to advance. You know, they're 8-1 at the Garden. So they like the matchups that they can get. And clearly, Coop loves the matchups he gets at home. So, but I think as this series gets to the brass tacks now, like, again, you have to look at the pedigree, right? You have to look at the guys that have played and have done these things and how they're all coming to the forefront. You mentioned Andre Palat earlier, like what a security blanket that guy is to have. Cirelli, Killorn, like all of these guys. Maroon scores a huge goal, right, to get them off on a good foot in game four and kind of set the tone for what's going to happen. They're all security blankets that have been through battle after battle, and I don't know that the Rangers have that. And as the collars get tight and it's hard to breathe, knowing how to breathe certainly helps. So it's going to be a really interesting, I think it's going to be a really interesting three games. And I don't think we're going to start the Stanley Cup to the middle of next week instead of early next week. Because I think it's going to go seven. The Rangers have impressed me beyond what I thought they could. And good for them. I just don't know that they have the wherewithal to survive what's a battle of will now, not a battle of skill.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, look, if it were to go seven, that for me, from a personal standpoint, that'd be three game sevens I get to cover in the first three rounds. 21 games, I'd go the max. And I'm certainly not going to complain about that. You know?
Yeah, well, I know for a fact that you're just happy that it's going back to Tampa for game six.
Here we go. So, here it is. So, I was waiting for it. It took this long. Go.
So you could go jet ski. So you could go jet skiing again. It's a nice life you have, Dan.
6 o'clock on an off night. Okay. We're done. Practices are over. The next, you know, the Western Conference final game wasn't starting until 8 o'clock. So what do? Well, you gotta enjoy the life a little bit in Tampa, right? You get an opportunity, go tooling around on a jet ski. By the way, mine got up to 44 miles per hour. And it was awesome. I would highly recommend it. And if, by the way, it is the Tampa Bay Lightning, I'm going to suggest that we organize an NHL.com and for our producer, Bob Bender, an NHL at the rink jet skiing outing.
Did you see Alex Killorn while you're out there?
I did not see him. I was looking around for Doc Talk with Killer. I was seeing if he had a set for, you know, but no. But these were the waters that Alex Killorn patrols as well.
Yeah, well, good for you, buddy. I'm glad you could do that. And the picture, in case anybody hasn't seen it, is fantastic. Yeah. It's all over Twitter. Molly Walker's Twitter feed from the New York Post. You might want to check it out. Dan's front and center, showing off his beach body. So check that out for sure. And, you know, who knows what adventures Dan's going to get up to for game six here in Tampa.
Well, there is a game six. Game five is tonight as we record this Thursday. So it's in a few hours from now. Colorado Avalanche against one of these two teams, Tampa Bay Lightning, New York Rangers. The next time we talk to you on this podcast, we'll know the opponent. We'll know the schedule. We might even have a game in. Who knows? But this was a lot of fun, Sean.
Always a lot of fun. And we'll see you for the Stanley Cup final. Looking forward to it.
All right. Enjoy the rest of the Eastern Conference final. And, of course, we'll talk to you next week.